Okay, we can move into the general discussion. And I am aware of just one topic that we need to discuss during this time, and that is the reason for Joe Shorn's presence during our conference call. Joe is with us to discuss some guidelines that we need to be aware of. If any commissioners choose to go out and solicit funds, solicit partnerships that include financial support in relation to any of the department's activities, and in particular, our desire to raise funding for the Youth Advisory Council is the reason we began the examination of the rules regarding solicitation of gifts. So, Joe, would you like to walk us through your legal analysis?
So this is Joe Shorin, office. If I might just ask Joe Store to sort of take us up a step to talk, just to tee up the issue more generally about the Youth Outdoors Initiative, which is sort of the context in which this has arisen, and then I'd be happy to just talk about the guidelines.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioners, hi, this is Joe Store. Happy Valentine's Day. Last October, I think everybody's aware, we pulled together a group of seven young people to bounce this idea of a youth advisory council off of, and I thought the meeting went really well. We had some help from the Superintendent of Public Instructions, who operate a legislative youth council, so that was very helpful. After the meeting, I think there was pretty much consensus that we wanted to continue to move this forward. And so to do that, we were working to build a strong foundation in terms of the intent of the group, in terms of the role of the group with the agency and with the commission. And as important as both of those, how do we fund this group? And so we were looking at something like a target of somewhere around $100,000 that would allow us $100,000 per year that would allow us to do a couple of things. One would be to hire a half-time person to focus on setting up these meetings, coordinating with the youth, coordinating outreach, putting agendas together, etc., and as well as then the outreach materials and meeting costs, etc., etc. And as we were putting together a focus sheet or a paper we would use to describe what we're doing to the public, the question came up about how would we best be positioned to go out and look for donations, and what authorities do we have or don't we have to receive donations, and how do you manage those, et cetera. So there are a number of framing questions around the receipt of funding support for this council and the use of those funds. And so that's where Joe Shorin got involved, and he has done a great job of scouring through the laws that we have in place and looking at the larger framework in terms of what's happened in other agencies. Just for your information, I contacted the governor's office on the budget side, the state executive ethics board, and the state auditor's office, and talked to senior people who have been involved in these kinds of questions before, and got pretty much got some good direction that Joe Shorin had already in large part identified, or we had in place from our other experiences, but didn't get any red lights in terms of moving forward on this. So given all of that, then we wanted to put some guidelines together that spell out the requirements, the legal requirements, comments and then give some guidance to the commissioners as to how to go out and solicit donations and some talking points that you might use as you do that. So I'll turn it over to Joe to give you the specifics there.
Okay, thank you. So, Joe Shoren back here again. And so I think what we've developed is a sort of a one-page set of guidelines for the commission. I don't believe these have yet been provided to the commission. Chair Wecker, is that correct?
That's right. I've got a copy. I think the vice chair has a copy, but no one else.
Okay, and I think that's fine. I think that what I'd like to do is just give you sort of a general description of these guidelines. I think there's some additional thinking that needs to be done and some process that I understand the department is prepared to undertake, which is a prerequisite to the actual solicitation of contributions for this purpose. So at the 80,000 foot level, the department has the ability to accept donations for conservation, for protection of resources, for a variety of purposes within the statutory mandate of the agency. What we're talking about here is sort of how to facilitate those contributions. There are certain legal requirements that the Secretary of State's office has relative to what are termed under statute charitable solicitations or solicitations by charitable organizations. And the statutes define those terms fairly broadly. A charitable organization is basically any entity that solicits or collects contributions from the general public is sort of the term. And the general public is sort of, any person or entity that you don't have sort of a official relationship with, that a charitable organization doesn't have an official relationship with. So essentially, if commissioners are soliciting contributions from individuals that the department, on behalf of the department, that the department doesn't have a formal relationship with, for example, like a license relationship with, or perhaps a contractual relationship, then these formal requirements from the Secretary of State's office concerning solicitation apply. So there is sort of an open question, I think, for the agency about how it wants to structure its efforts to fund this program in terms of who you might want to target and whether the agency would want to limit its efforts to targeting persons with whom the agency has a formal official relationship with, in which case the technical requirements of registration with the Secretary of State's Charitable Solicitation Office and the requirements of reporting solicitations and doing these solicitation activities in particular ways wouldn't apply. But in the interest of providing some guidelines that would apply, assuming that you are going to be contacting folks with whom the agency doesn't have one of those official relationships, I helped the department put these guidelines together. And, you know, you may have had someone come to your door over the years who was soliciting for some charitable organization, and they had a badge or they had a clipboard that sort of described who they were and the organization that they were raising money for. And those are the types of requirements that apply. Not that we're going to give you all badges, but those are the types. There's certain pieces of information that are required to be disclosed to persons from whom the solicitations are made. And these guidelines lay those out. And it's not, it's not an enormous list, but there are certain specific pieces of information like, your name and the entity for whom you are soliciting and contact information for the Secretary of State's office. And there are time periods in which you can and you can't solicit. It has to be between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m., can't be beyond those hours. and you can't, the person who does the solicitation can't make in-person attempts, basically, to sort of follow up if the person solicited doesn't make the contribution they said they would. You know, you can't go knock on their door and say, hey, what happened? And I understand that these may not be the types of conversations that commissioners are intending to have. You're probably not planning on going door to door, but rather having conversations with, you know, individuals in the industry with whom you're familiar or you have, a comfortable opportunity to have a conversation. But nonetheless, if it is a charitable organization, if the department in this context is a charitable organization, and if it's soliciting from entities from which it doesn't have one of these official relationships, entities or persons, then these formal requirements apply even to those conversations that you might think were really more casual. So these guidelines, which we will provide to you, provide you with some guidance so that, you know, we make sure that you are within the guidelines that the State Secretary of State's office provides. A second category of guidance concerns how you accept these gifts. The department's authority in terms of accepting donations is vested in the director, and so any contributions that are received really need to be channeled through the director or the director's designee, which I would imagine that would happen anyway. And the commissioner shouldn't accept cash. You need to accept checks only, and I don't know that we have a credit card arrangement set up at this point, but you're talking checks. You know, one of the things that the department's statutory authority provides is the ability for a donor to indicate that they want their funds to be spent for a particular purpose, and in order to help facilitate that intent, it would be very helpful for people who write checks to the department for this purpose to make a notation on the check that it is for the Youth Outdoors Initiative, and that will then enable the department to be sure that it channels those funds into this initiative rather than just going into some general pot of money that, you know, is available for other sources. Commissioners want to be mindful about who they have these conversations with. You want to be mindful about public perceptions thinking about entities who have business before the department or maybe are actively, have an active petition or some other active piece of business with the department, so as not to create a perception that there's some relationship between this solicitation or the generosity of a donor and the commission's formal action on some pending piece of business. I think you want to focus on folks who you think would be good partners for the department. And so there's also some general guidance about sort of how to have that conversation with folks. You want to stay positive. Sometimes it can be frustrating. I know I've done solicitation or fundraising for my, for my college and for schools that I've been involved in, and it can sometimes be frustrating when people don't step up. But it's really important, obviously, to stay positive. Think about building partnerships, and it's not just about the money. My recommendation is that you keep your conversations about this initiative separate from conversations about other official business of the department, again, to avoid possible, misperceptions that somehow there's some kind of quid pro quo or something associated with a donation. And for that reason, I also would recommend avoiding sort of broad solicitation statements to the general public at commission meetings, that these be more targeted and outreach efforts. Now, that said, as I mentioned earlier, that the whole sort of nexus to the state charitable solicitation requirements is when you solicit from the, quote, general public, which the statute defines as persons or entities with whom the department doesn't have an official relationship with. And I do think it's a question for the department to consider, you know, whether you might be more effective soliciting your licensees or some other entities that you have easy access to. And I know that that may create other issues and considerations, but it would certainly relieve the formality of going through this solicitation process and the whole reporting process. And there's a registration process associated with organizations that do charitable solicitation. So I'm going to let Joe Storer jump in here for a moment.
Hello, Madam Chair, Commissioners. I've got, we talked about this, I guess, last Thursday morning. Joe Shoren had just introduced this notion about the direct relationship, and I've been thinking about it a little bit, and I have a proposal I wanted to bounce off of you, and especially with Joe here, to see how we would move forward on the short term. I have the Secretary of State form for the charitable organization registration in front of me, and it's relatively simple. And it's, you know, it's $60 for initial registration and a $50 optional expedited service charge. And so for $110, we could receive expedited service on application to be a charitable organization. And I would propose we would go ahead with that because that would allow us to do two things, and I'm checking with Joe as I say this, but that would allow us to get the commissioners out and in a you know legally approved way, be able to solicit donations from the general public, so from those sort of non-licensees. It would also, because we have the ability to solicit from licensees, and with this charitable organization registration from the general public, we could put something on the website, and it could be a kind of a passive. You know, we've got this youth advisory council, and we're looking for donations, and we'd be covered with the general public as well as with our licensees legally. And Joe's nodding to the affirmative on that notion, and then we could take some time and think about how we want to approach licensees, because I think there would be some sensitivities there, especially as we think about fee increases or, you know, the who we would focus on and how we would tailor those messages. So if we were to do kind of play both paths and upfront spend $110, get registered as a charitable organization, and free up the commissioners with this guidance to move forward and do good things, we put something on the website that would be, you know, relatively passive, but it would be there, and hopefully we could watch, you know, in terms of how many results it brings, and then we could get more strategic about how we approach our licensees. So that's a proposal on how to move forward, I think, that I'd like any feedback on that you might have.
Okay. Sounds like a great idea to me. I know Vice Chair Smith would be extremely enthusiastic about the idea of moving forward, getting ourselves positioned to begin this process of fundraising. Any questions from the commission? Okay.
Madam Chair.
I think you did a really great job, Joe, making it very clear what the rules are.
Chair, a question, Commissioner Smith.
Sure.
Would we need to make a motion to affirm Deputy Director Storer's suggestion, or is that something that the department has the latitude to do itself?
I'm sure they have the latitude to do it, and I just would like to hear if there's any objection. I don't think we need a motion. Any objection?
No objection.
I think you've got the green light.
No objections. None from here.
Yep. Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Joe Shoren. One just final point. And that is, I just want to emphasize that until the department does actually register with the Secretary of State's office, that commissioners shouldn't go ahead and take any action to solicit directly from folks. We need to get that registration in place. That's a requirement of the statute.
Okay. Okay, well, why don't we circulate the guidelines once you've got us registered, and that way that will be the cue for us to feel free to go forward and utilize the guidelines.
Perfect.
Madam Chair, this is Joe Storr. I know I said I was going to do that this week, but that was on the assumption we were going to have this conversation on Saturday, and so I will. We will get together and get the registration form in with an expedited this next week, and then we'll see what the turnaround is at the Secretary of State.
Okay.
I hope expedited means expedited.
All right. Did anyone go to the Big Tent Coalition function? I think it was yesterday.
I was there, Jason Westbank.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, this is Joe Storr.
Yeah, Joe.
Jason, I want to commend Jason and Bruce Botka for, we had a nice presentation, a large panel with a lot of information about our Fish Washington program and other things that we do. It was actually nice to have a large panel because our escalator's broken. And so we hit the broken do not use signs for the escalator with this nice big panel. But it was very effective. If you've been to sports shows, we had that nice display, and we had staff there. So thanks to Jason and Bruce for that. Was well attended. It coincided with the Washington Wildlife Recreation Coalition board meeting, which was in town during the afternoon, and also with a lot of other legislative activities. So all kinds of folks were there, from the sports recreation equipment sector to I saw Liz Hamilton, Carl Burke. There were a whole bunch of our constituents there. The governor spoke and introduced his executive order establishing the Big Tent Coalition. Agency leadership spoke. I talked for 3 or 4 minutes because Phil was up in Canada. The legislators, or a number of legislators, Senator Ranker kicked it off, and then a number of legislators spoke after agency leadership. It was a nice kind of sunny day in the rotunda there, so it was a nice setting. So it went pretty well. And then a lot of those folks took the opportunity then to go out and talk to legislators about the whole effort. So it went well.
Yeah, and I should clarify, too, for commissioners who are not on the Big Tent Committee, the commission's Big Tent Committee happens to share the name Big Tent with the Big Tent Coalition, which was an organization, I'm not sure how old it is, but created before, I believe before our Big Tent Committee was created. And the idea is very, very similar, that it brings together private sector, public sector, who are interested in outdoor recreation, promoting that part of our economy and getting people outside. So Big Tent Coalition is made up of all of the larger companies, as well as a lot of different organizations, non-governmental organizations. It represents a lot of our constituencies. So they're organized. They're a force that we can tap into to achieve some of our ends. That's great. And the governor's enthusiastic, as we saw during our meeting with the governor. Okay. Good news. Thanks. I was noticing, too, that there's a big prediction, a forecast for Columbia River Fall Chinook that's hit the street. Director Anderson, do you want to give us a little preview? I didn't give you a warning about this, but I just got an email recently, and 1.6 million fall Chinook forecasted is what I've heard, which would be a record.
Yeah, I just saw that this morning. I just got back from Vancouver, BC late last night, and it's up from just under 700,000 last year, which the February forecast last year was 600 and some. So it's up at 1.6 million. A big chunk of it is upriver bites. About 900,000 plus of it is upriver bites. So bodes really well for in-river fisheries, bodes well for ocean fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
What it may mean in terms of the abundance-based managed fisheries, which we call the AABM fisheries, to the north of the border, and how that may or may not have an impact on exploitation rates on Puget Sound fish remains to be seen once we get the modeling done. You may recall that I also mentioned during the director's report last week that the Coho forecast was up at like 1.2 million for the what we call the OPI index, the Oregon Production Index. That's up from like 700,000 the year before, so that's looking pretty good too. Just as continuing a bit here, broadening it a little bit, for the first time we have an escapement goal for Grays Harbor that's been approved by the Pacific Salmon Chinook Technical Committee. There was a joint presentation primarily led by WDFW staff in front of the Chinook Technical Committee day before yesterday up in Vancouver. We have a new escapement goal of, I believe it's 13,533. So that's a change from what the old, and this is a spawner recruit based escapement goal. And that's an aggregate goal between Hump Tulips and the Chehalis side of the basin. The old goal was 14.6, so down just a little over 1,000 fish. The other thing that it did, though, was redistribute the goal between the proportions of the aggregate goal between Chehalis and Hump Tulips, so that there's a bigger portion of the total that's now attributed to the escapement needs of the Hump Tulip system than the Chehalis side. So that's been something that's been kind of hanging out there for a number of years, and really hats off to our fish program staff, who did an awful lot of work on bringing this forward, and we did it in a manner that was collaborative with the Quinault Indian Nation. So the other piece was you may recall that we had we lost what we call the anadromous fish grants, which was used for monitoring and sampling of a number of our recreational fisheries along the coast, as well as commercial troll fishery. We backfilled that hole with funds out of the coated wire tag improvement fund through the Pacific Salmon Commission. We debated, argued, I suppose is a better way to say it, until 2:30 yesterday afternoon up in Vancouver before we finally got an agreement within the U.S. section to continue funding those activities for this year. So that was a big deal for us. It's about $440,000 that would have been lost, and frankly was lost as of 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, but we were able to get it turned around in the section meeting with the other commissioners yesterday. So just a couple of updates from the last time.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Schmidt.
Commissioner Schmidt.
I can add a few other forecasts for the Columbia River. Our Upper Columbia River Recreational Fishing Group met with Region 2 Director and the fish managers over a week ago. And for spring Chinook, the forecast this year is 308,000. That compares to the 2013 return of 193,700. That's a big jump. Summer Chinook, 67,500. That compares to 67,600 return, so almost exactly the same. Here's the one that will open, at least open my eyes. Sockeye, total forecast 347,100. That compares to 186,100 last year. The Okanagan goes crazy again with 282,500. Lake Wenatchee is forecasted for its highest at 63,400. So there's some very robust forecasted figures for Columbia River fish.
Great. Very exciting. I can tell Barb's going to be out there.
The ladies' day is every Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else for our general discussion?
Madam Chair, it's Commissioner Carpenter. I also was in Vancouver from Sunday. I came back Wednesday because I was out of gas, but I serve on the southern panel there. But on an economics note, I think that's worthy of a minute's discussion on the Fraser sockeye prediction. They have a whole list of probability ratings. I won't go into all those, but the on the low end of the forecasted run size for Fraser sockeye this year, it's 23-24 million. On the high side, it's up to potentially 72 million. That's going to create some management issues as it relates to Puget Sound stocks as well, but I mean a huge economic opportunity for the commercial fleet to have a robust year too, and I think that's worthy of putting on the table.
Great. Lots of good news. Or good predictions, anyway. Hope they materialize. Okay, anything else? All right, I guess we've reached the end of this conference call. Thank you all. Again, happy Valentine's Day. Have a nice
weekend.
You.